And we continue at 107 in the afternoon. Talk Radio 790 KABC, the John Phillips Show, broadcasting live from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, residents in a neighborhood in San Francisco say that their neighborhood has been taken over by hookers and pimps.
And are they upset or are they happy about that?
Well, the residents are upset. The line of cars going around the block are very happy.
Wow. Got to check out those Yelp reviews.
Well, they're happy until they go to the doctor the next week.
That's why they support universal health care up in San Francisco.
Well, you know, nowadays, the super gonorrhea, the antibiotics don't even work.
The world's oldest profession, Randy. 800-222-KABC is your telephone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is my pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a former official in the Reagan administration. He is also a political analyst, former co-worker of mine over at CNN. You can follow him on Twitter at RealJeffreyLord and get him online at TheJeffreyLord.com. Jeffrey Lord, welcome.
Well, I don't know, John. I was thinking, for the first part of what I was just hearing, I was thinking of going to the airport and getting my ticket for San Francisco. Then I heard the second. I heard the second part, and I decided not to do it.
Or you could just buy a ticket on Southwest, and that'll take care of it. You won't end up in San Francisco
after all. You and I are old enough to remember a song. I think his name was Scott McKenzie. If you're going to San Francisco, wear a flower in your hair. Clearly, you need to do more than that now.
We'll have more on the hookers taking over one neighborhood in San Francisco coming up later on in the program. But Jeffrey, let's start with the Chinese spy balloon that is currently flying over these United States of America. There are any number of elected officials who are calling on the Biden administration to shoot this thing down. Unfortunately, they decided to send it over here on a day that is not New Year's Eve or a day that Mexico won a soccer game. Otherwise, there'd be plenty of bullets flying into the air, and we'd take care of that balloon lickety-split. Joe Biden has not shot it down out of the sky yet. What do you make of all of this, and how concerned should we be?
Well, I certainly don't think it's an accident. That's one thing. But I must say, my first reaction was to shoot it down as well. And then the thought occurred to me, you know, with all of the technology that we have in this world, you would think that we would have the capability to take it down. You know, I don't mean shoot it down. I mean capture it and bring it down safely and find out exactly what's in it instead of blowing it up. Now, I don't know if that technology is there, but you would certainly think so at this point.
When you were in the Reagan administration, you guys were cold warriors, and you were up against a different type of communist regime. Communist regimes don't have to deal with a free press. They don't have to deal with transparency. They don't have to deal with their citizens knowing what their government is up to, and lying is second nature to them. The Chinese said that the virus, the COVID-19 virus, was not created at a lab in Wuhan. Of course, no one believes them because the word is coming from a communist party and communist government. They're saying that this balloon was a civilian balloon that was collecting weather information. Is there any aspect of what the Chinese government says that we should consider valid?
Call me skeptical. You know, when President Reagan took office, a couple days after his inauguration, he had his first press conference. And Sam Donaldson of ABC asked him how he would deal with the Soviets. And Reagan said, I can remember this almost verbatim, that he was very familiar with the history of the Soviet Union. And they reserve unto themselves the right to lie, to cheat, to steal. And when you're dealing with a country like that, you need to be very careful. Well, the country may have changed, but I think, you know, his words of wisdom come through to today. I mean, you just got to be extremely careful with this kind of thing. And, wow, you know, and one of the things that I liked about Donald Trump is exactly what I liked about President Reagan, was that they both understood the concept of peace through strength. And, you know, your opponents out there, your adversaries or potential adversaries, have to have the respect that you will, in fact, stand up to them. If they get the feeling that you won't, that brings trouble.
I have a theory on what's going on in the Biden White House, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I believe that one of the reasons that they are paralyzed when you have an incident like this taking place very quickly in real time is that Joe Biden's cognitive abilities have failed to the point to where he is not making the calls. He is not the one who is the captain of the ship. He doesn't know where he is half the time. He doesn't know people's names who are around him, people who have been working with him for years and years and years. I believe that this is a government that is essentially run by committee. His woke staffers and woke advisors are in the room, and they're fighting with one another, not always on the same page. And whenever you have any organization run by committee with very different ideas as to how the organization should operate, what you end up with is you end up with an organization that cannot do anything. They're paralyzed. And this is a situation where you need an assertive leader who can act quickly and act unilaterally on their own. And we don't have that in the White House right now. We have a bunch of people who probably disagreed with one another on what to do about this. And the result was do nothing.
Somewhere down the road, John, maybe after we're all long gone from the planet, historians will get to the bottom of what's been going on here. But, you know, this reminds me very much of all people, Woodrow Wilson. And the story, for your listeners who may not be familiar with it, he went over to negotiate the end of World War One at the Treaty of Versailles in Paris and got included in there a League of Nations. He came back to Washington to find out that the League of Nations was not popular in the Senate and Republican senators were against it, and he might not be able to get it passed. So he took it upon himself to take a train trip across the country to campaign for the League of Nations. He gets out to Colorado or somewhere. He's not feeling well. They stop the train in the middle of the night, take him out, walk him around in a farmer's field to get him some fresh air, put him to bed. He gets up to give a speech the next morning. His wife takes one look at him and says, "You're not doing it. We're going back to the White House." They get back. 2 days later, she finds him on the floor in the bathroom, unconscious, blood streaming from his head. The bottom line, he had a stroke. The doctor, who was his doctor when he was governor of New Jersey, says to Mrs. Wilson, "No, he can't be making any decisions here. It will add too much pressure." So what happened? Mrs. Wilson and his private secretary, who'd been with him in New Jersey, Joe Tumulty was his name, and the doctor were the ones, in essence, running the country. I mean, I have to say, every time I look at Joe Biden, and, you know, on a personal note, I took care of my late mom who had dementia in her 90s. And every time I look, and I was close up, I mean, I could see it and deal with it every day. And every time I see Joe Biden, I see good old mom, you know, the vacant look in his eyes. I mean, just the other day, he was doing this, I think, Chinese New Year's celebration or something in the East Room. And he finishes talking, walks off the platform, and there's a huge crowd of people there in the East Room. And then you can just see it in his eyes. He's not sure where he is or where he's supposed to go. He turns around, is looking around, and his wife takes him by the hand and guides him out. Wow. And if you think that people like us are noticing this, what do you think about Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un and all of that kind of thing? These people have more than noticed this. They don't need a weather balloon for that.
I don't know if you saw it, but Bill Maher recently sat down for an interview with Chris Cuomo, our old colleague over at CNN, on his new show. And he was asked if Joe Biden should run for re-election, given everything that we just discussed and more. And his answer was yes, because he didn't believe that the Democrats had any other viable option. He doesn't think that Kamala Harris can do it. He doesn't think that Mayor Pete can do it. He doesn't think that Bernie can do it or Elizabeth Warren. And they know that Biden's been able to do it once before, so why not just stick with him? I think they're going to run him again, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. The problem that they have, and again, I go back to my mom, is this kind of thing is not a drop off the cliff. What it is a very slow, gentle decline. And, you know, by the time we get to 2024, I think this is going to be worse. And, you know, if you think he's on display now as an incumbent president, wait till we get really once again into a serious presidential campaign and he's got to be out there every single day. You know, maybe they'll put him in the basement again. I don't know. But I think this is going to be hard for them the second time around.
If you wanted to hide it, how do you hide it? And I say that because you watch the nightly news. They don't show his gaffes. They don't show the scenes that you just described. They cut it down to the meat of what he's saying. They play it. And if you didn't watch the whole thing, you may not be aware that he was lost in that room, or he had the vacant look in his eye, or he didn't remember anyone's name, or he didn't remember what city he was in. Do they just rely on the news media to cover things up for them? Or will it get so bad that the news media won't be able to do it?
Well, I think it is going to get so bad eventually that the news media won't be able to cover for him. The nature of this problem is that you can't hide it eventually. And good Lord, if you're president of the United States and you've got every television camera available in Washington, D.C. trained on you, this is going to be a real problem. And I think people are going to understand it. Not to mention that the policy aspect.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
They're making all these policies and they're not working. And, you know, people will hold them accountable for that for sure. But, this is going to be a real problem for them. I don't have any doubt about that.
One of the things that happened in the Trump White House, in part because people like Jared and Ivanka and Reince Priebus were, in many cases, the ones doing the hiring, but people who work for President Trump were extremely disloyal to him after they left the White House. They would write these tell-all books about private conversations, private correspondence that happened when they were in the White House, and everyone outside that White House understood just exactly what was going on in those walls. We haven't seen that happen yet in the Biden administration. We haven't seen anyone leave and write a tell-all about what's really going on in there. Why do you think that's the case, and do you think we'll get one soon?
Well, I think at some point we will get them without doubt. You know, one of the things when you leave the White House, you sit down, at least I certainly had to do this, sit down and talk to a White House historian so that you've got things for the record. And then eventually they wind up in the president's library and all of that kind of thing. So I believe some of this stuff is going to, you know, will get out there. The question is when. And, you know, what you have inevitably, And you had this in the Reagan administration, too. You know, I'm seeing all these ads right now on The Economy or Money or something, and they feature David Stockman. Well, David Stockman in the day was the young congressman from Michigan who was made director of the Office of Management and Budget under Ronald Reagan. And he got into such turmoil inside the administration, not to mention eventually with the president who fired him. he then wrote a book going after the president, going after the White House staff, et cetera, et cetera. I have to say this kind of thing happens. I suspect at some point it may happen again with the Biden administration. But what you've got to have for it is not they're either angry at the president or they're angry at some of the people around the president. And this is their way of getting even. So welcome to working in the White House.
Do you think Kamala Harris stays on as the vice president in the next election?
I think it would be hard for him to get rid of her. I mean, she's got, I think, certainly so many obvious flaws that are increasingly evident to people. But for all the political reasons, I think the, you know, progressives out there and the party, you know, the squad and all of that kind of thing, you know, what's important to them is her race, not how she's doing the job. And Biden himself goes along with that kind of thinking. This is, as I call it frequently, the party of race. Everything is about race. And frankly, always has been. I mean, this is a party. I'm writing about this for my Newsbusters column tomorrow. This is a party that was literally formed by slave owners. The first seven Democratic presidents were slave owners. They wrote platforms supporting slavery. And when they lost the vote in Congress to abolish it, with the 13th Amendment, they set up the Jim Crow laws and segregation and all this. So this culture of everything is about skin color has been around forever. And I think it is around in her case. And it will be very difficult to dislodge her from this job if that's what some people want.
Will that come back to haunt them? And I say that because with a president who's in his 80s, whose cognitive abilities are exactly as you and I have described in this conversation, people are going to look at the vice presidential nominee in a different light than they typically do. And if they see her as being someone who is fundamentally incompetent, and they see him as someone who's not likely to survive another 4 years, that's going to become a huge problem for them.
Yes. Oh, it will be a problem for sure. And I think whether it's President Trump or anyone else who's the Republican nominee, I think great weight will be put on selecting the vice president so that that person will stand in stark contrast to Kamala Harris. I think that's inevitable. I have no idea who it would be, but yeah, I think that's going to happen.
Last question before you go. We have another octogenarian here that's the topic of much discussion in California, Dianne Feinstein, who has not announced whether or not she's running for another term in 2024. That isn't stopping other elected Democrats, including Adam Schiff, Burbank Democrat, Katie Porter, a Democrat from Orange County, and Barbara Lee, who hasn't publicly announced but privately is telling people she's going to run, from getting all of their ducks in a row for a U.S. Senate campaign. Why do you think they're not waiting for her to announce that she's not running and they're just going guns a-blazing regardless?
I think either they've got inside info that's sort of common knowledge about, you know, in California, high California Democratic Party circles, or they've just are taking a gamble, but I think they all feel that she is going to go. And so, you know, these races are expensive. They're hard to win. You got to get out there early if you're going to do this. And California, as I always say about Pennsylvania, I'll say with California, California ain't Vermont. You know, this is not some tiny little state where you can cross from one end to the other in a couple hours. This is a huge place. And if you're going to be the senator from California, the governor of California, whatever it may be, you've got to get out there early and often, particularly if, you know, members of Congress, of the House, are not household names. You know, they're well known in their district, but they're not necessarily known all over the state. And that's a task that they've got to get to. So they start now.
Jeffrey Lord, you can read him over at Newsbusters. The column is out, what is it, tomorrow?
It'll be out tomorrow. Yep.
All right.
Around 4 or 5 o'clock at night.
And you can follow him on Twitter at Real Jeffrey Lord. Jeffrey, always such a pleasure to chit-chat with you. Thanks so much for stopping by. Can't wait to read the column tomorrow and have a wonderful weekend.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much. See you later.
Well, we haven't heard from the fake doctor in a while, in part because we're talking about balloons, we're talking about votes in Congress and people getting kicked off committees. We spent a lot of time talking about the rain. But technically, there's still a COVID-19 emergency in Los Angeles, which means the fake doctor still lurks among us.
In fact, Barbara Ferrer, I have a question for you. Will the mask protect you against the balloon?
I have no idea.
Well, the fake doctor did have a press conference yesterday, and Vox 11's Marla Tejas was there. You can, of course, watch Marla weeknights on Fox 11. Marla is kind enough to join us right now. Marla, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Jimmy Buffett Friday. Thanks, you two, for having me on. John, it's been a while since I've been on with you.
Yes, well, I'm happy to hear your voice. Thank you so much for stopping by. So let's start with the fake doctor, because she had this big press conference yesterday. Is she finally willing to admit the pandemic is over?
No, the answer is not quite yet. I did pose that question to her. Of course, this is because this week we learned that, well, first of all, let's just back up. LA City lifted its COVID declaration as it relates to a COVID emergency. The state has an end date on the 28th. President Biden is saying not until May, but there is a date. But here in the county, there is no known official date as of yet. Keeping all that in mind, I asked, are you ready to call this the endemic phase? And she said, no, it's just a new phase.
In fact, we have that sound.
So are you comfortable saying that we've moved from the pandemic to endemic? As I said, I'm going to wait till the WHO declares the pandemic over, because they're the organization that's responsible for sort of declaring that there was a worldwide pandemic, because the word pandemic means it's across the whole world. So, I mean, that's what a pandemic means.
But here
in the county, I feel very comfortable saying we're in a new phase. Very comfortable.
Why won't she say it?
Randy, I don't know. I wish for a moment that it would be celebrated more than it is, that we are now in February. We never saw the post-holiday surge. So I think that, you feel good about that. I feel good about that. We are still seeing these low numbers. Our case levels are stabilized since last week, but deaths are down, and she really, that's the worst thing about the pandemic is people have died. And fortunately, deaths, that number continues to drop, and that's a great thing.
Now, let's walk through the nuts and bolts of this, because the state's declaration of emergency expires on what, the 28th of February?
The 28th. And John, to be clear, I walked in there yesterday thinking that the county's declaration was tied to the state, in that the county was going to align with the state and lift its on the 28th. But come to find out, there is no end date at this point. It is up to the Board of Supervisors. So I went to the board to get that answer and have not heard back.
But if the state gets rid of their state of emergency, part of the reason that people like Barbara Ferrer get their extra powers is because of the statewide emergency. When that goes away, we have to go back to normal. Even if the county has a declaration of emergency, she can't just act unilaterally. If she wants to bring back, say, a mask mandate, I don't think she has the authority to do that. I think the board, which doesn't have to vote right now on something like a mask mandate, would then have to vote to grant her the authority to do that, correct?
Well, that's the gray area, because what she said yesterday is not that. She says that just because the state lifts it doesn't mean that we have to lift ours. That's what she said to me. I was looking for clarification.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The way that you're reading it could very well be the way, but I still think that that clear answer needs to be stated.
Well, and if you just look at the reality of the situation, if Newsom allows the statewide emergency to go away, and many people believe that she doesn't have the authority to bring back a mask mandate, and let's say she tries to bring back a mask mandate, I can't imagine anyone's going to comply.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, because we know that the new board chair, Janice Hahn, has already come on the record on our show, probably on your air, and saying that she doesn't support another mask mandate. And she's not the only one on the board who feels that way. There's that. But then also just looking at the reality of COVID right now in this state, and the fact that we are getting to this point where these emergency declarations are being lifted and that these numbers are significantly low, especially in the county of 10 million. And so we can feel good about that. And at this point, there wouldn't be a need for her to even tread in that territory, as was the case in early December, for her to even mention a potential need for another mandate.
Yeah, that's the last thing, especially with a newly elected member of the Board of Supervisors, Lindsay Horvath, who took over the Sheila Kuehl seat. The mm-hmm. last thing those five women are going to want to deal with are angry calls, angry emails from their constituents when the rest of the world has moved on. If she tries to bring the mask mandate back, no one has an appetite for that.
Yeah, and then there's that issue to that point of compliance. And they don't necessarily, they don't have those health officers going out there and checking to see if you're masked. So there's that element of it as well. But as you saw in the feed, she still does have her mask on, and we are asked to put the masks on. There's the signs when we enter the small room that this you call it a big press conference, but when you said big press conference, you know, last week I was the only one in there. This week, I'm trying not to laugh with your laugh. John, your laugh makes me laugh. When I walked in this week, it was me and an LA Times reporter and one camera person there. So there's a small group of us there, very small.
It's just her press conferences and the Colbert Show. Those are the only two venues left that demand the masks.
Yeah. And, I asked how long these press conferences will go on weekly, because, you know, it's funny how this has evolved. Because remember on the Zoom calls that we were doing and we couldn't get any of those follow-ups? And then we were applauding that finally we had these in-person briefings. And even on that first one, I was really the only one there that showed up that day. And so, I've been there throughout. I think she does deserve credit for holding these pressers in person. She's the only health director that I know of that does weekly briefings. But as these numbers, and there's not a lot of news to report, I asked her how long this was going to take place. And she just said, I'll just keep doing it. And so, she says it's her role, and she's there doing it each week.
No, and it becomes a in-person interview for 5 minutes every single Thursday. It's must-watch YouTube for me. Now, Marla, another thing that Barbara Ferrer was concerned about with the statewide and the federal emergency orders ending, statewide at the end of February, federal at the end of May, is that that means a lot of the funding that goes towards testing could go away, and she wants to work at the Board of Supes to keep that. What she's talking about is the mandatory testing, like for the schools, for the hospitals, for the nursing facilities. at the other press conference we get every week, the LA County USC Medical Center's in-house briefing, Dr. Brad Spellberg lamented that the only reason they're counting any numbers at this point is because they make everybody test. Listen to this.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Soothiness Wednesday. It really is more of the same message we've had for some time. Countywide cases continue to decline as they have been. We are sort of hitting a nadir point. It's going to be hard. As long as hospitals continue to test asymptomatic admissions, we're going to still have positives. So it's going to be hard to get a lot lower than kind of where we are near now.
Are we at the point where even the doctors are saying, why are we testing?
Yeah, I mean, and we've asked Ferrer, Randy, as you know, multiple times about what we hear from Soothiness Wednesday doctors versus what she puts out in her press conferences. So two very different narratives are being told, and it's just trying to weed our way and make our way, navigate our way through that, the Ferrer, and then also Soothiness Wednesday and the need for testing at this point.
Let's shift gears for a second, because today was a big day for Fox 11. As a longtime member of the Fox 11 family and the Southern California family, a man whose face and voice have been invited to breakfast tables and living rooms all over Southern California for literally decades, has called it quits. Tony McEwing is retiring from Fox 11, and you guys gave him quite a send-off today.
Oh, this morning was so special. I hope some of your listeners were able to catch it. Yeah, Tony McEwing's last day here at Fox 11. He's been on our air for more than 3 decades, more than 30 years. His whole career has spanned more than 40 years. He came to us from Sacramento almost 30 years ago, and he is just such the fabric of this station. And the beautiful thing about Tony is, and why he's so beloved, and having sat next to him as his co-anchor for 3 years, he is exactly what you see on TV is exactly how he is in real life. I mean, he's so genuine. What you see is what you get with that guy. And that's why he's so trusted and beloved. And so, yes, it was a wonderful, certainly bittersweet send-off, because he deserves the world, and he deserves to not have to wake up at, you know, oh, dark 30 anymore and just be able to enjoy life. And we had a nice luncheon here at Fox right after he got off the air at 11 o'clock, and people spoke and cried and laughed. And, you know, now he's at an undisclosed location being celebrated right now, off campus, if you will. I can't be there because I'm here at work, but it was wonderful to be able to spend some time with him this morning. He is a wonderful man.
Such a great guy. And I remember Jillian telling me a story one time about how in the old days at Fox 11, when everyone would have to put in for their vacation time, it wasn't done on the computer. What they did was they had one calendar, and based on seniority, if you've been there the longest, you got the calendar first, and you got to mark it up with a pen and say when you were going to go. And Jillian said that at the time, she didn't have kids, so she didn't care. So she would go out of order and go at the very end and just take whatever was left over. And I asked her, who would go first? Who got the calendar first? She said, Tony McEwing. Tony McEwing had been there longer than all of us.
Oh, yeah. And the one thing that it was funny, Maria Quibon in her statement and her speech to him today said, one of the things I learned from Tony is to never return from vacation on a Monday. And so he had like the vacation. He was an expert at how to take a vacation, never return on a Monday, because then you're just, your whole week's too long. And yeah, so he now has his well-deserved permanent vacation.
And we all wish Tony McEwing the best, because he is the best. And so are you, Marla. Thank you so much for stopping by today. Oh. We'll all be watching you on Fox 11. And have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. Thanks, John. Thanks, Randy. Have a great weekend.
You too. You can watch Marla on Fox 11 and follow her on Twitter at Marla Tejas. If you want to email the show, you can do so at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. That's johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. And Randy, you're monitoring the mailbag right now.
That's right. And Jeff wanted a clarification. He emailed us at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com about that COVID end date. Jeff wants to know, what month did Marla say that Joe Biden's end date was during? Barbara, do you know?
I have no idea.
She doesn't know. But I know it's the month of
May.
And if they decide to extend it, this
and
audience.
I want you to be all the way pissed off.
You got that right.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.